Welcome to the Confident ROI. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that I've enjoyed talking about, and that's neuroscience and mindset and applying it in business. Got a guest today I've known for a couple of years where we met, actually going through and learning about brain-based leadership with Dr. Dan Radecki. And my guest, George Niemann, he's gone into this as his profession, and he's working with companies and sports teams applying the latest in neuroscience and mindset so they can get better outcomes. And it's an enjoyable conversation. George is not a scientist, but he's applying the science in the real world in business. So I think you're going to enjoy George Niemann. He's a Vision Pursue. They can help you and your company implement these the latest insights that unlocks our brains. Our brains don't come with manuals, but they desperately need one. And I think just the way society is and how things are going, people are thirsting for how better to run this supercomputer between their ears before it drives them crazy. So sit back and enjoy this interview with George. And I enjoyed it myself. And if you're interested in a copy of my book, Transform Your Company, go to confidentroi.com and click on the Hey Vorobyev button and request a copy. I'd be happy to send you one. Enjoy the interview. George Niemann, welcome to the Confident ROI.
Alex, I appreciate it.
Well, we met on our parallel but overlapping journey. It's been parallel, but then sometimes it splits. But we met learning about a topic from one of our teachers, Dr. Dan Radecki, with psychological safety. And we were both looking at neuroscience and how to apply it in business, but you've used it in your career as well as going full on into applying neuroscience and mindset to not only help companies, but individuals and teams. How did you get to that point?
Yeah, Alex, it's been an interesting journey for me. A couple years ago, I guess it's been now since you and I met, navigating through Dr. Dan Radecki's work at the Academy for Brain-Based Leadership, which was probably the second or third step in my journey through this. Looking back on my career, I grew up in a Fortune 100 company from the age of 22. You jump in, you put your nose down, you just go to work, right? You're moving up the ladder, you're getting bigger business cards, you're making more money, you're moving to different markets, getting a little bigger home, right? And my wife and I kind of shifted gears in the mid 2006, 2007, we started a family. Left the big corporate space and then got involved with a small bank here in northern Wyoming. And then got recruited back by the big box and because I had an itch to...
They pulled you back in.
It did.
Whenever you get out, they pull you back in.
So there I went again, chasing the next big thing, chasing the dollar. And it kind of got to a point, I think, where my personal experience was just this lack of fulfillment, right? Of always reaching, but never really feeling this fulfillment. And what did satisfaction look like? What did success look like? And so during that time, there were some interesting things going on within the corporation that I was working for and kind of had this reflection on there's got to be a better way. I hired and trained and fired a lot of individuals over the years and trying to crack that code, right, on performance and what drives people. So that led to a deeper study of mindset and neuroscience and had an interesting partnerships with some individuals that kind of mentored me through this process. And so looking back, man, I would have done things a heck of a lot different growing up in my career, both just individually and things that I did, but then also how I managed and trained people. So I've been able to take that experience in the corporate space, apply it with a lot of the new recent neuroscience research, in the world of mindset and how the mind operates to help individuals, teams, organizations. And we've worked with Fortune 100 companies to college sports teams, to even some professional sports teams at Vision Pursue. So it's been good. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, you just got this year, you spoke to both the Final Fours, the men's and the women's.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable opportunity. I was able to fly down to Tampa, which was nice warm weather that time of year for us, and spoke at the women's Final Four, really on two topics. Before that, I traveled up 2 days later to go speak at the men's Final Four. And as you know, there's a tremendous amount of stress and anxiety and mental challenges from all ages, our youth through high school, through college, and we're starting to see it in the workforce as well. So it provided me a unique opportunity to talk about two things. One, what we call mental wellness, which is kind of taking a little bit of a different spin on some of the challenges and talking more about how we can take proactive approaches to mental wellness. And then the second being culture. And so how that impacts culture and trying to help coaches better navigate those waters to still do what they do best, which is coach the respective sport that they're in, while at the same time paying a little bit of attention to what's happening in the mind of the student athlete. So tremendous opportunity. It was a lot of fun and made a lot of great connections.
And what you presented there, was there anything that stood out for the participants that I don't know, even surprised you that it made such an impact?
Yeah, I think first of all, was that we're moving beyond stigma. And there's been a lot of talk in the last 12 to 24 months about removing this stigma of mental illness, mental challenges, anxiety, depression, and some of the things that go with that, and looking more for solutions. You know, what are things we can do as coaches? How can we help our student athletes? What are things we can integrate into our campus? And so the stigma has been removed, I think. And so it's created an interesting opportunity to really get to the core of helping student athletes with some of the pressures that they're facing. So that was the first. And I think the second was the lack of knowledge. I was really kind of surprised by that. I would have thought that coaches would have dug in a little bit more into the trenches on some of the things that are happening from a behavioral standpoint and what that looks like behind the scenes. So that being said, I think the college coaches and administrators are now seeking that knowledge where I thought they kind of had it and they were seeking more for the solutions. So I think we're in a great transition opportunity here to help at all levels.
Yeah. College athletics and basketball is a incredibly profitable, I don't know if it's an industry, nonprofit industry.
Right.
And it's had an incredible ride, but things are kind of coming out. There's a lot of, you know, challenges for the individual athletes, for the coaches. People are crossing some lines. Mm-hmm. Geez, people actually want to make money while, you know, some of these universities are making lots of money.
They are.
And it's kind of this incredible pressure that's there. It's on TV. And so things are it turns up the heat in that, and you're surprised that, you know, they haven't really looked at this. I mean, they've built a successful business model, but I guess they're now dealing with the downside every business model has. I have this theory that every business has some little dirty little secret, and you know, that's kind of the last thing they end up dealing with, right? We haven't mentioned your former employer, but you know, they had, you know, they were perceived very highly, and then they weren't. You know, it seems like the secret always comes out at the end.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we're in a much more transparent society than we've ever been in, right? I mean, social media with Instagram and Twitter and posts that you can make instantaneously and sometimes anonymously makes for an interesting thing that I guess executives and need to pay attention to from a cultural standpoint. And it certainly imploded. I call it the power of pressure. Right? There's that fine balance between pressure to get an individual to perform at a higher level, but then pushing them over the line, so to speak, to where then that individual has to make some choices on, well, I need this job, I've got to keep this job, and I've got to hit my goals and my numbers. So a lot of times it'll force individuals to cheat and to cut corners and to find different ways around things, especially when you tie in a financial component. So I think that in and of itself as that was a good example of a large corporation that kind of took the hit for the rest of the players to start paying attention to those internal cultures and what that looks like from a pressure standpoint. But the deeper issue that I see associated with some of that, the cultural challenges as it relates to pressure is then how that plays out from a behavioral standpoint and what's happening inside of the brain-body system, right? What's that doing to the human system from a stress standpoint and from a mindset standpoint and some of that stuff that happens at work that then gets carried home. And so I think we're seeing that the pressure at the high school level, the pressure at the collegiate level, and now these individuals moving into the workforce are trying to figure out how to manage all that. Like, how can I still have a successful career and work in business? How can I still maintain a good family balance, still hit goals, make money, and still manage all this stress and all these things that are coming at me? So it's an interesting dynamic that's taking place inside of corporations all across America.
And so you've been a student of the neuroscience and mindset and applying in business. What are some of the tools or maybe a story you could share with how people are dealing with the modern pressure?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is awareness. And as I look back on not only my own individual career, but I look at some of the student athletes that we're working with currently, and then kind of taking a look at, okay, what's this look like in the corporate space? Let's just take as an example of a 30-year-old. We were working with a corporation out of Montana, and the boss, the CEO of this company, was managing a number of different departments, but then these department heads had these employees, and most of the employees were in this range of 30 to 35 years old. And you could just see, first of all, when you walk in to conduct some of the workshops and trainings that we do, you can just see it on their face, right?
I mean, what?
Yeah, they're exhausted. They're nervous. They're trying to figure out their place inside of the company in some circumstances. And so just initially is that pulse, right, that you see in front of the company and the management teams.
Sounds but, like you're in like a chicken coop at a production farm.
Yeah, exactly. So and so that's kind of the first step is I think working at the leadership level to identify some awareness around the challenges. And I think in years past, we've always just done surveys, right? Like I grew up with a company that just lived and died by Gallup. And so Gallup, you know, the 12 keys to this.
That are we week. Up in the polls?
Yeah, we up in the polls. Did we rate a 2 this year? Did we rate a 3, a 4? Where are we at? Okay, high five. We got a 4. And I think there's a lot to be said for just asking those open-ended questions. Like, how do you feel? Yeah, how are you balancing all this? How do you manage stress? Tell me about your stress. What's stressing you out on a day-to-day basis? And I think what I've learned in working with companies and corporations is that's a fantastic approach because in the transparency that we have inside of corporations and companies right now, as I mentioned, more so than we've ever had before, is that people are willing to share. And we can get a leadership team that's willing to listen. That's step one. So I guess to further answer your question, you know, the practical application of the neuroscience, what we're finding is just the lack of an understanding to emotionally regulate. And the old term was EQ, but now we really understand what's happening inside of the brain, what's happening inside of the human brain when it receives that threat or the external stimulus, that upset customer, that email that comes across from even a colleague, and just that little bit of cortisol that radiates through the human brain and how it shuts down the prefrontal cortex, right? The thinking part of the human brain. And so how long
in the stress generates cortisol and then physiologically shuts down.
Exactly. So now all of a sudden, you know, you have this happening inside of your human system. And when we can create some awareness around that, you're able to kind of, not to get into mindfulness at this juncture, but to create some conscious awareness of what's happening inside of the human system is certainly step one, right? And you can look at that from two different approaches. One, we firmly believe at Vision Pursue that there's two different things that are happening. One, automatic thought patterns. And we talked about this from a neuroscience perspective is that we're wired to pay attention. It's just how we survive. We've got to have these attention seekers out there in our environment. And so we're reading that constantly. And because we operate so much in the unconscious, we tell ourselves stories. And so we just create these different stories on a day-to-day basis on what's happening to fill in the information that we don't know. And so these automatic thought patterns can lead to an emotion. So let's just say hypothetically, I was working with a team back up in this Montana group, and she was telling me this story about, you know, every time that my phone would ring and it was my manager, I immediately, my heart started racing. I started to get sweat across my brow in my office, and I started to get nervous. And so, you know, I said, okay, well, why? She goes, well, I always had this fear that, you know, my boss was going to say something negative, or I got in trouble, or I did something wrong. And so now you kind of have this culture of fear. Well, the boss was just, could have been something positive. Like a lot of time it was great job, or, hey, you want to go to lunch? Or I just talked to this client. I'd like to refer you. And can you give him a call? So once you kind of get dialed into that and help them understand that that story that they might be telling or receiving could be true or could not be true. So we call it big T, little T, right? Mm-hmm. Is this a big true story or is it a little true story? So what happens so often in the mind is that, you know, we've been conditioned on our past experiences. So we have all these things that have happened in the past where maybe one time out of 10, my boss did call me and get into me, right? And so now I'm carrying that negative story. We talk about the 8-to-1 ratio, where 7 to 8 times more likely to you know, process things from a negative connotation. And that impacts your mindset. And then what happens is we skip right over the present moment and we start playing out what might happen in the future. And that's where we get into a lack of productivity, right? Because that one call created 5 minutes or 5 seconds of interruption of negative thought pattern. I pick up the phone, something good, bad, or indifferent happens. But at that whole time, I'm not even really paying attention to listening to my boss because I'm all concerned about what might happen in the future. The phone call hangs up. A lot of times the employee forgot what was even said because their brain shrinks down, right? The PFC shut down a little bit because I'm so nervous. So we find that that individual then lost about 30 minutes worth of productivity because then she would sit and dwell and think and tell herself stories. And then
her brain's still kind of in a shutdown mode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Got the wrong juices flowing.
So the brain's in threat mode. It's trying to pay attention to things because biologically we're wired to survive. So it's saying to the system, survive, 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 pay attention. And so many times we're paying attention to the wrong things. So kind of a long drawn out story of a couple of examples that we had with the company that we were able to move the needle on some things.
So when you talked about emotion regulating, it was of... the individuals or the boss, who was it both? I mean, you talked about the willingness to share. Mm-hmm. Millennials want to share. My generation doesn't always want to hear it.
Right. So
who needs to emotionally regulate? You know, where's the breakdown? Where's the failure to communicate?
Yeah. Good question. So I think that that always becomes the choice, right? Because the other side of the automatic thought pattern is then the automatic emotional patterns, right? So these emotions then are driving through my system. And so we help people really understand that emotions and thoughts are not you, right? Emotions come and go. And so if emotions can come and go, they don't own you. You don't own them. And so they are not you. You can separate from that emotion. So one of the things we teach at Vision Pursue is just an acronym called SEE, S-E-E, which the S stands for separate. The first E stands for embrace. And then the second E is evaluate. And so we start talking about emotional regulation and automatic thought patterns. We can help people understand that, first of all, we just need to separate from that emotion, which is conscious awareness. So we first go in and work at this on an individual basis, if you will. So we want the employee to understand what's happening in their brain-body system and why they're triggered and when they're triggered in order to create some conscious awareness around it. And then also working with a leader. And saying to them, okay, I'm always directing my information to my employee in this capacity. I am also very habit-driven, and my emotional system works like this, and my brain-body system works like this. And how is that influencing or impacting? And what's really powerful is when we can work with teams at both the corporate level or even back into the athletic realm, and we get the buy-in from the leader and the buy-in from the employee to go, holy cow, I didn't realize that's what was happening in your head and this is what was happening in mine. How could we look at this differently? And then when we can open up that dialogue, then both really kind of seem to come together a little bit. And the leader says, wow, I could probably engage in that a little bit differently if I slow down my thought patterns, present this information a little bit differently. And then the other individual says, wow, I shouldn't get all fired up or what have you. And so I think it's a synergistic relationship in the best of situations. We've had the opposite happen where the boss says, well, I'm not changing. I'm digging in. You know, I'm not doing that. And the employee says, well, the heck with you. If you're not going to shift, I'm not going to shift. And so you get some additional friction. So it's always kind of talking about outcomes and what the desired opportunities are between that organization.
Yeah. So we talked about that manager, she was by her phone and the phone rang. So it was a matter of teaching her how to separate that feeling and, well, how would she embrace it? I mean, she's got negative stimuli from that phone before.
Yeah, exactly. And so when it comes to embracing, we just get into labeling, right? It's just that quick little pause to say, okay, I'm feeling anxious. And so we like to use the word experience. I'm experiencing anxiousness. And that immediately is a shift in a mindset, a shift in thinking. Because if I'm saying that I'm experiencing something, I'm having it come in and it has the ability to let go. And so we immediately talk about labeling the emotion, recognizing it, embracing it, and then letting it run its course. A lot of what we hear in this mindset space, which I believe is incorrect, is to say to push that emotion away. Don't become angry. Don't become anxious. Don't become this. And that's impossible. I mean, these are automatic, hardwired emotions that are designed to keep us safe, that are going to radiate through your human system, through your brain-body system.
And in the modern way we communicate and as the speed and the unfiltered emails and that and text, that it's worse, right?
It is.
It's exacerbated.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree. And I couldn't agree more. And that's why I think one of the competitive advantages in the workforce today, that the skill sets that leadership teams need to learn, is what I call these soft skills, right? And a lot of executives, such as guys your age and higher, if you will, you know, it's weak. It's weak to be vulnerable. It's weak to practice some empathy. It's weak to, you know, remove some judgment, have care and compassion. But those are the skills that need to be developed to have this effective teams move forward. Because if we're constantly in this threat mode, and that's the way the culture is designed to improve productivity, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work. And we have found that to be true in the teams we work with.
Well, and the millennials are literally just walking. Yeah, they'll ghost you. They'll ghost a company. They just won't show up.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, you just endured it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did at the beginning of my career. And that's because I was conditioned by my two older brothers that said, hey, you're going to get beat up. That's the way it is. Keep your nose down. You know, you need the job. You got to have an income. You got to have insurance. And certainly the new generation doesn't look at it from that perspective. And that's okay. I always ask, you know, leadership teams, do you think this new generation is going to change? Or do you think you might have to shift a bit? Because if you're suffering from 70% turnover, and that's happened for 24 straight months, and they're not going to shift. Do we need some convergence there and a little give and take between both? Yeah, I think so. I think that starts with education and knowledge, and that has everything to do with this neuroscience and the mindset.
Is it helping that in the general culture, people are embracing meditation and mindfulness?
Yeah, really, really good question. We call it the three M's at Vision Pursue, which is mindset, meditation, and mindfulness. I think that Eastern philosophy is meeting Western science, right? What we've kind of known from the monks and the Tibetan crews and what have you is that they probably kind of had it figured out. I read an article the other day that a well-trained monk processes 5 to 10 thoughts per day. How peaceful would that be, right? 5 to 10. The average American processes 60,000 thoughts per day.
Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be like for a second or for a half second.
That's crazy when you think about that. And 70% of those are coming across as negative, right? We know that from neuroscience research. So that's why, again, we really need to be paying attention and to give conscious awareness to some of these thought patterns and emotional patterns. And I think the key to that is to train our mind and train our brain-body system to consciously pay attention so that we can eventually operate unconsciously in that pattern, right? I mean, that's what meditation in mind, you're consciously training your brain-body system to operate more effectively in the unconscious. So in the sports space, we call that being in the zone. And I use that analogy now within corporate, like being in the zone, you just float through the day, things go well. The same negative stuff that used to just irritate the heck out of you on a day-to-day basis just doesn't seem to be influencing or impacting you as much. So what happened during that day? How come you were in so much flow during that day? Let's talk about that. Well, now what we know about neuroplasticity in the human brain is that it can be rewired. And that's just very recent research. The brain can be rewired. It can, produces these growth factors and rewires itself. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's always changing and shifting. So I would say you've got a choice on how you want to train your brain. If what you're doing currently is still working for you, absolutely, keep doing it. But if you're seeing something that's not correct in your behavior or something you do want to shift, then meditation and mindfulness is a great place to start.
Well, yeah, there's two paths we can go there. I want to go on both. And let's talk about the individual because, we went through the brain-based leadership course with Dr. Radecki. And what I come back to all the time was that the nets and what we could do individually for our brain and the nutrition and the exercise and the mindfulness training and the sleep. Oh my God, the sleep. The book, Why We Sleep, just changed my life now. And it's kind of ironic because now you got all these books like Get Up Early, which I like to get up early, but it's like, you do need sleep too. It just it doesn't help to get up early if you got 4 hours of sleep. But the individual, regardless of the organization and their boss's issues, if they're not sleeping, if they're not moving, I mean, we're designed to move. Mm-hmm. It's almost like we're setting ourselves up for failure. Is that part of how you're working with individuals?
Absolutely. We like to take a holistic approach. So two things I pick up there that you just mentioned is one, we spent a lot of years in this blame game. And I caught myself in it, Alex. I mean, at corporate, as I winded down my career, I had an interesting boss down the stretch. And it was easy for me to blame her for my lack of performance, right? Oh, it's her fault I can't go ahead and make sales calls, or it's her fault that I'm not getting these deals through the pipeline. If I only had more support, right? And so I think one of the things that we first start talking about is about you to start. I mean, we've got to look at your brain body system and try to get it optimized. And then once we realize that and we get that happening within yourself, then we can start talking about the organization and the team. I've got to give some props out to Dr. Etienne van der Walt out of Cape Town, South Africa. Phenomenal leader, phenomenal neurologist and medical doctor playing in this space of resilience. He's developed a brain-body optimization model that he utilizes in his teams within corporations. And I'm lucky and fortunate to know him and be certified through their methodologies. But there's 10 behavioral drivers of human performance as they've put together this model. And four of them are what we call foundational drivers. And the very first one, sleep, exercise, nutrition, and silencing the mind. Okay. So they call them foundational for a reason. Like, and so I always kind of give the analogy of a car battery. Like you're kind of coming in with a charged car battery for the day. And sometimes you're going to come in at a 90, and let's face it, you're never going to be at 100% every day. Maybe it'll be a 90, maybe be an 80, maybe be a 70. But those four I just mentioned, you kind of have control over. I mean, that's kind of on you. So I was at a conference with him, and I actually asked the question for him, so to speak. I had an opportunity to speak in front of a neurologist on the subject of neuroscience and mindset, which were the most intimidating presentations I've ever done.
I hope you got sleep, and I hope you Express the night before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Perfect. But I asked him that question, you know, out of all these 10 drivers, if you wanted to move the needle on performance, which one would you be focused on? He said, hands down, sleep. And it's one thing to say that, but then you back it up with the research behind it to look at the lack of productivity, the inability to pay attention, the inability to focus, the inability to be much more reactive in the workplace, right? So I like to use the term the 7 to 9 to not fall behind. It's kind of the term we use when we're talking to companies. But that's also comes, you know, you kind of blend that with silencing the mind, a little bit mindfulness and meditation so that you can get in these patterns, this circadian rhythm of waking up at the same time, fueling at the same time during the day, hydration, all these things that are just going to give you that little bit of competitive advantage to manage yourself more effectively, but also help your team and organization perform at its best.
And so the neurologist,
yes.
They said sleep.
Sleep. Yeah, absolutely. Number one driver of human performance. But at the same time, you know, you look at behavioral drivers and you think, man, changing behavior is tough. I mean, right? I mean, that's why the exercise industry is what, a $20 billion industry with a 97% fail rate. Right, I want to go to the gym. Beginning of the year, I'm going to get a membership. All right, I'm going to do this. I'm all in. You know, and then you just drop off. So you've got these behavioral challenges, and so that's where we get into mindset and really kind of understanding. Okay, why do I want to make this shift? What's my motivation? What kind of knowledge and information? How is this going to benefit me? How is it going to benefit the team and the organization? And once individuals can begin to kind of dive into those concepts a little bit, you got a little bit higher probability of actually seeing some of those things through.
Well, and how did you get there? Because you started on the neuroscience and applying that in business, and you've gotten more into as well as that mindset. And so what's the difference, or how'd you get there, and how does that look in the real world when you apply that?
Yeah. So I think mindset in and of its whole is what we say is mindset is sort of how you see the world, right? Mindfulness then becomes how you experience the world that you see.
So what was the first one? The first one was?
So mindset is the way I see the world.
Okay, the way I see the world.
Way I'm seeing the world.
Right.
Mindfulness then becomes how I am experiencing the world that I'm seeing.
Okay.
So we talk about mindset as just as an example, instant gratification and kind of reward systems, right? You know this from our studies in the neuroscience of the brain. You know, the dopamine channels, right? We need those hits, and now we're getting them faster.
The good juice.
The good juice that we've ever gotten. I mean, that's why this phone that these guys aren't seeing this, but I'm holding up my phone right now to you. I always joke with companies that I can increase productivity by 15% because they say that if you put this phone out of sight, it's proven through research that productivity goes up by 15%. So I always guarantee that right out of the gates. But when we talk about mindset, it's interesting to talk about the dopamine and the reward channels that need to be satisfied in the human system. And so many times if we're not getting that through a task, so let's just take as an example, sales professionals. We work a lot with sales professionals. And we talk about mental recovery, right? Mental training. And so when I lose a sale, let's just say I go out and I'm going to have a lunch with this guy, and it's a huge sale in the broker industry, and it's a $20 million sale, and it's a $200,000 commission on the line. And if I don't get the sale, so think about the preparation in that, in the mind, like the picture that you're painting for this expectation and this outcome. And so what happens so often, and from a mindset standpoint, is we're putting so much value on that result and that outcome that if I don't get it, that has defined me. That now becomes who I am. And so we see a lot of sales professionals that are so dialed into those results and outcomes, those commissions, that they are the roller coaster sales professional. One quarter, they're blowing the doors off. The next quarter, they're in the trenches, right? And that has everything to do with how they're approaching their sales, right? So your kind of pre-sale routine mentally, whether you are truly in the present moment with that client. So you're paying attention on purpose in the present moment, right across from this individual. You're engaged, you're understanding the questions, you're pivoting properly. And then you either win the sale or you lose the sale. And so many of the sales professionals then get back to the office. The boss says, "Did you get the sale?" Well, now the boss is reinforcing this kind of pass or fail type of approach of mindset, right? And it takes it completely out of this learning process. So what we really focus on sales professionals is to get into what we call error correction, right? So understanding the process associated with how we presented it. What was your pre-sale? How long did you work with him? How many calls?
So error, like error mistake, not
error. Exactly.
Error mistake. R-O-R, not A-I-R.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So error correction. So what can we shift? What can we change? What do we have control over? We use the term.
So is that looking more at the process than the outcome?
Exactly. So now you're just shifting your mind immediately from this result and this outcome and understanding that's a byproduct of a certain process, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we can pull the mind into now controlling the controllables, did I present the information properly? Was I clear enough? What was my message? What were my words? What was my body language? All these things that we know that we have control over is how we get better. That's how we learn. That's how we pivot. And when we can get into that mindset, so to speak, it takes all the pressure off the results and the outcome. And it's tough to get into because we still know that the result's important. We got to get paid. We got to close sales. We have to perform. But where am I giving my attention and where am I giving my focus?
Okay. And getting both the doer and the coach, for lack of a better, instead of the boss,
sure,
them focused on that same sort of process.
Exactly.
Getting back to our friend, she was answering the phone earlier.
Right.
If she knows it's the process, then, and she feels safe in that, like, hey, if I'm doing the process, if I'm working the process, mm-hmm, yeah, we might correct something, but it's not, I'm not going to get an electronic zap in the wrong part of my brain when I answer this phone because we didn't get the desired outcome.
Exactly. It's so really we encourage leaders to pay attention to those first questions. You know, when you're a salesman,
questions of who?
Well, when you're looking to debrief with your salesperson, so you're a sales manager, paying attention to that first question, like as opposed to did you get the sale? What went well?
Okay, that just puts you in a different. When you're talking about questions, open-ended questions, that puts the recipient in a different mindset.
Frame of mind. Exactly.
Than that conditional love of, you know, did this work? You know, mm-hmm, what grade did you get? I remember when my parent asked me that. You know, I knew the question. So that was the only thing that mattered.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time on that. And if you didn't get the grade, you didn't get the love. I mean, it's an easy equation, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, spot on. And we talk about conditioning and we talk about the minds of our youth these last 5-10 years. You know, my kids are 14. And as you may know, I have 14-year-old triplets. And so it's an interesting psychology experiment just inside of my house. But you...
On a lot of levels.
On a lot of levels, yeah. And so the parents, you know, you ask a parent or you ask a kid, there's a lot of concepts out there, you know, with Dr. Carol Dweck. She was kind of the pioneer in the field of the concept of growth mindset versus fixed mindset. And so it's almost a falsification of growth mindset is some of the terms that are coming out now because people say, oh, I got a growth mindset. So you ask a parent, oh, I got a growth mindset. And then you say, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Parent, your kid's a highly competitive athlete. They play on this elite basketball team. Your son just came home from the game and you haven't, let's just say this doesn't happen, that you didn't talk to him on the phone or didn't text. What's the first question you ask him when they come home? And the parent,
did
you win or lose? Exactly. Did you win or lose? So now we're already creating this outcome focused group of kids that now understand the only way I'm going to receive praise, the only way I'm going to be perceived as doing well in front of my parents is, did my team win? And the next question is, how many points did you have? How many rebounds did you have? How much playing time did you get? Right? And then you've got this me selfishness. And so we're seeing that now play out in corporate, because as they get through college, get into corporate America, there's this same thing has been conditioned. So it's a real challenge within corporations now to integrate this mindset component into a, what we call common language inside of teams, so that we can understand that we're pulling our mind back into this error correction, and then finding out, okay, if I have this error correction, what's my motivation to improve? So we talk about motivation. Motivation and confidence are interrelated. They can't be separated, right? Well,
And what's ironic is the professional sports have kind of embraced this a lot faster, where it truly is win or lose.
Sure.
You win or you lose, and the fans clearly will love you less if you don't win. Because they lost money on their bet, or they don't feel, their chest isn't as stuck out in the next day, but their team didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
But that, they embraced it. I mean, the Oakland A's embraced the process. Yeah, they changed the way they selected players, but they embraced the process of how to hit, how to have an at bat. Not just a successful at bat, but what was the process?
Yeah.
If they wanted to take more pitches, they hitting a fly ball out on the first pitch, that was not the desired out. That wasn't following the process versus getting more pitches than that. The Houston Astros, there's a book out now, I guess, that goes in, just came out, and they've really kind of advanced on what the A's have done and help give pitchers and hitters more of a process and to try to work the process more than just to get the desired outcome.
Yeah. No, well said. And I appreciate the baseball analogy. I was just down in Scottsdale, Arizona, got back yesterday, and got a great opportunity to potentially work with some Major League Baseball players. And I was kind of blown away in talking to the individual that represents these baseball players. And I said, man, there's got to be psychologists and sports psychologists and clinicals and medical doctors working inside of these organizations that are helping these players. He said, you'd be surprised. This is real cutting edge, new stuff that's sort of coming out within professional sports. I was kind of blown away by that. But one of the things, the other individual that was sitting with us was also a youth baseball coach. And so he runs an elite team down there in Scottsdale, Arizona. And he said, we only get an hour and a half twice a week to work with these kids. And so the first thing we do is jump right into, grounders and throwing the ball around the infield and pitching and go, go, go. And then the next practice, all about hitting. We at bat, at bat, at bat. So I said, well, when you get back to your team, I said, ask your kids if they know how to strike out. He kind of looked at me. He says, what do you mean know how to strike out? And I said, well, we all strike out. What if you're batting, baseball better than me, 300? If you're batting 300, that's great, right? So 70% of the time, you're not getting the job done. And it says, so you got to go back to the bench. So what's happening in the mind of that athlete as they head back to the bench? What are they thinking about?
How to handle a strikeout.
Exactly. How to handle a strikeout mentally.
Sit at the end of the bench with your head down.
Head down, because then you peer up at mom and dad. Dad just threw the popcorn across the stands, and the scouts in the stands, and the scouts saw the kid strike out, and he goes back and out, and the coach glares at him. We see this play out over and over again. And that has everything to do with how we are conditioning the human mind of the student athletes, coming up, and again playing out in the corporate space.
What did you talk about? Did you talk about how to prepare him to strike out?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, a couple of things we talk about is kind of moving back into silencing the mind. Mm-hmm. And so we say, if the head is full up here, the hands are going to be heavy. Mm-hmm. So if we're full in the head, the hands are heavy. And what we want to do into getting into that process component is right into error correction. Like, okay, I struck out. Let me look at my internal processes, right? So that's step one, is just dialing in and creating that conscious awareness of what we talked about before. I'm realizing now I'm anxious, I'm angry, I'm mad. So we're going to apply C, separate from that emotion, realize that emotion is not me, okay, as I walk back to the bench. Once we can create some conscious awareness of what's happening in the human system, hopefully over time, you're training your mind to do that in the unconscious, okay? Then we're embracing it, and then we're just evaluating it. So evaluation becomes back into the mechanics. You know, did I drop my knee? Did I turn too quickly? I got my hips out in front and my hands didn't, you know, follow through. Whatever those trainings are, and that's what I don't get into. I'm not getting into the mechanics and the training. They've got batting coaches for that, right? But pulling the mind back into error correction, do I need more knowledge? Do I need more motivation? And what is it that I can improve on in my process? And when you go back to the bench with that in your mind, now you're controlling the controllables, right? Now I know next time I get back up, I know fundamentally from a mechanics standpoint, and hopefully I have an exercise there to get back to bat and have some more success. And when you can pull the mind in there, then the results just become a byproduct of your process. And it frees up your brain-body system to simply work in a more relaxed physiological state where we know flow is at. We know being in the zone is at. That's where we want to be mentally and physically.
Cool. So we've covered a lot of topics today. Yeah. Anything we missed we want to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
Yeah, no, Alex, I appreciate it. This has been awesome. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have, again, working with student athletes, high school through college, and then even into corporate America, is helping the individuals understand the ability to emotionally regulate, right? Which, again, starts with that conscious awareness. So we see when kids get angry, or an employee gets angry, or a sales professional gets angry, not having the skill set to process that. And to understand it. So one of two things happens, right? We either become an emotional roller coaster, so we allow those emotions to just run the show, or two, we suppress. And we suppress the emotions, we drop them back into the belly and we sort of discard them and we isolate and we try to push that emotion aside and not learn how to deal with it. That's where I believe we're starting to see some of this anxiety and stress amongst these young kids. And it's creating a very interesting storm on the horizon, is what I like to say. Some interesting statistics, you know, 20% of student athletes or just students in general are diagnosed currently with some sort of mental illness. And they're going to make up 75% of the workforce by the year 2025.
You said 70%?
Over 75% of the workforce will be millennial and Gen Z.
Okay, but they're not. They're not 70% is not having a mental disorder.
No, correct. 75% will be the workforce, the body of the workforce.
I got you. Okay.
What's really
20 or 25% are having an issue.
Exactly, having an issue. And now you look at the statistics of senior leadership and executives that are suffering from chronic stress and burnout. So you got short tempered, not sleeping, overworked, overwhelmed executives. And we're seeing this play out even in healthcare with resilience and teachers with resilience challenges. It's just an interesting dynamic. The other stat is by the year 2030, we could see close to 800 million jobs being replaced by robots. So I think, again, back to my triplets, what are our kids going to be paid to do? Our kids are going to be paid to think. They're going to be paid to think, collaborate, innovate, create, you know, work in teams, work in groups. But we have this challenge of the hardwiring of the human system and this inability to emotionally regulate and this fear of failure where I can't speak up in a group or I might screw up this project. And that gets into everything that Dr. Dan Radecki talks about, which is on social safety. So this work is needed more than ever across all industries. it can have a significant impact on the performance of individuals and teams. And I think it could significantly impact a lot of factors as we move into 2025 and beyond.
Well, terrific. And how can people get a hold of you if they would like to learn more and apply this in their business?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. My email address, george@visionpursue.com. So george@visionpursue.com is my email. And that's probably the best place to reach me. If you have questions, you want to have a conversation, talk over the phone, looking for research, looking for information, challenges that you might have on your teams, or just looking to get better. We're happy to help here at Vision Pursue and happy to do the work that we're doing.
Terrific. Well, George, it's been great to catch up and look forward to hearing more stories and updates.
All right. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks. If you're liking Confident ROI, or even if you don't, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thanks.